Today is December 31st, 2006, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
Okay, actually, it's not December 31st. That's a complete lie. As we're recording this, it's sometime before that. We're joined this week, actually, by John Martellaro. Is that how you say your name, John?
Yes, sir.
Excellent.
Yes, it's a tough one.
It's a tough one. TMO's new afternoon editor is a frequent columnist at TMO. He's going to be joining us to talk about the Macworld Conference and Expo, which is this thing that happens occasionally. Steve Jobs gets up on a stage and he waves around and stuff appears magically. It's very exciting. It's going to be from January 8th to 12th. The keynote is on January 9th. There will be people swooning and fainting, and then eventually you'll leave the building and everyone will suck some oxygen and come back to life. It's in San Francisco. It should be a very interesting thing. What we're going to be doing this week, it's kind of the pre-show, the orientation, if you will, talking a little bit about what goes on at the show for those of you who might never have been to a Macworld Expo or who might be going for the first time, and also talk about the role that it plays for the Mac platform, for the iPod platform, for anyone who pays attention to this stuff and kind of wants to know how this fits into the picture. So that's kind of what we're doing here. And then we're going to talk about some other stuff related to Apple toward the end, since we've got John here and he has a lot to say about Apple. So let's jump right into it. Jeff, John, both of you, as I understand it, have been to many Mac worlds. I'm curious, let's all talk a little bit for a second. What's the best reason for the Mac World Conference and Expo to exist? I mean, what's the point of the Mac World Conference and Expo?
You know, actually, I think the best point or the biggest objective for anyone at Macworld is to be able to go and have this nexus where they can find as much information in one single location as possible. And you can't really get that anywhere else any other time of the year.
John?
And it's a great place to meet people.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoy going and meeting friends. I send email to them all year long, or I read what they're writing, but hear about what's going on with Apple friends and things that they're doing. But it's great to just be there in person. One of the things you don't see on the surface, though, is the things that are going on behind the scenes. Macworld is a great place for people to get together and do deals. People have a sense of synergy there, and there's lots of smart, enterprising people, and they get together and they dream up projects. New businesses are formed, partnerships are built. Apple's busy behind the scenes briefing important partners. So it's really the great watering hole, as Jeff said, the nexus for everybody to come together once a year and see people and make things happen.
One of the things that I was really focused on here, to me, the answer to this question, what's the best reason for Macworld San Francisco? The only unacceptable answer is the Steve Jobs keynote. To me, I think for many people, that's what they associate most strongly with the Macworld Expo. But this idea that the keynote is the thing that defines the show. I mean, Apple could throw a media event anytime it wanted to. It could find other venues to make big product announcements. Do you guys feel that there's anything vital about Macworld specifically for Apple to make its product announcements?
The whole world's looking at Macworld every January. So it is important for Apple to have a good keynote with some exciting things because everyone is watching. And it also helps feed the excitement for the whole event, and it does draw a lot more people into the area, either just as tourists or to attend Macworld for the expo or for the other conferences. So there's a kind of synergy thing happening there. But you're absolutely right. The keynote in and of itself is not the most important part of the event, even though it does tend to get the most publicity.
Also, it comes right after CES, so it gives Steve Jobs a chance to one-up Bill or as it is now, Steve Ballmer.
The other Steve, Steve Ballmer, right, CEO of Microsoft.
And actually, it'll be interesting to see how the media handles Macworld this year, because CES falls completely within the same time frame as Macworld. They start the same day, and Macworld runs one day longer. So there's going to be a lot of journalists that are flying back and forth between San Francisco and Las Vegas.
One of the things I think has happened lately is that the keynotes have become a little bit defocused. They've become more of a platform for Steve to kind of stretch things out and introduce new products. I've been kind of getting the feeling lately that the keynotes get readjusted at the last minute, and so they seem to be a little bit long on some things and short on other things, as the behind-the-scenes things don't happen the way Apple would like.
And we can talk about that in a couple minutes. This is all related to a broader question that I wanted to ask you guys about. What is going to be different about this year's show? I mean, Macworld is, you know, it's been in San Francisco for years. It's been in the same conference hall. Steve Jobs has done keynote addresses. What's going to be different about this year's show?
Well, this is John. I think that we've got a certification here of Apple creating the big business opportunities. In earlier times, companies were jumping on the bandwagon on the iPod, but I have never seen so many products ever before and so many business opportunities for companies. I remember long ago, you know, in the late 90s, vendors would sit around kind of glumly in the booth with their products for Mac OS X and the Macs, just trying to survive and struggle while Microsoft was making big money doing big business with all of their enterprise software. Now we've got big business. Apple's created an opportunity for these companies to make money. And I think this is going to be the big stamp of approval, the big showcase push for all the companies that see Apple as not as a partner, but as a company that'll help them make lots of money.
There is, if nothing else, it's a bigger show this year. I mean, they, for the first time, certainly in my memory, the show will be in two halls at the Moscone Center. There are, I think, over 400 exhibitors. They've got an auto show with a lot of iPod accessories, and they've got, you know, the John Lennon tour bus, which they've had at a few different shows. It's going to be a big show. Specifically, John, I'm curious if there are particular companies that come to mind for you as companies that before, where they would have been sitting around with their finger in their ear at the Macworld Expo, now they're there and they are really excited about the Mac platform as an opportunity to make money. What are some of those firms?
Well, you know, I think that's going to happen maybe in the future. And with respect to the companies, we've got all the traditional companies that have been working side by side with Apple and iPod sales and support for Macintosh products, accessories. But I think what's going to be different this year is for the first time we're going to see Apple's movement into the living room, and Apple becoming a competitor with Microsoft, the Xbox, and all the other companies who want to bring new avenues of television and video into your living room. I think that's what's going to be different this year. We're going to see that for the first time. And that might entail some other companies that we haven't seen before in terms of video content companies that sell Blu-ray machines or other partners. That's going to generate interest in companies to put high-definition TVs more explicitly and Apple customer faces and so on.
Jeff, what do you think about that? Movement into the living room, is that going to be the big story at Macworld 2007?
I have a feeling that will be the big story as far as the media is concerned. I have a feeling, though, and I don't know what Apple will show us, but I have a feeling they're going to show us something that makes the really observant people sit back and go, oh, geez, Apple's changing everything on us again in a fundamental way. And then over the next few years, we'll see that play out. It probably will relate to the whole Apple in the living room, home entertainment type arrangement. So, but we'll have to wait and see. But I do have to say, over the past 3 years, each year I've seen a marked increase in the enthusiasm and energy both of the vendors that are at the show and of the attendees.
It is definitely becoming a bigger and more vibrant show as time goes on. You know, some of the companies I know that if you look actually at the map of the show floor, particularly the main room, which I think is the south room in the Moscone Center, Apple, of course, occupies this enormous gargantuan booth in the middle of the room, and then it's surrounded kind of like little satellites around their enormous booth by companies like Extreme Mac has a really big one. Belkin is right next to the Apple booth. I should have the map open while I'm talking about this, but I'm pretty sure that help me out here. FileMaker? Is that the word I'm looking
for? FileMaker, they're usually pretty close to Apple.
There is that kind of Adobe, I'm sure, is right next to Apple's booth. And those booths are getting bigger and bigger as well, and that seems to go along the lines of, and I'm just talking right now about the actual real estate when you look at the map that they occupy on the floor. John, is that related to the stuff you're talking about how the big business is getting more and more invested, more and more excited about this show?
Absolutely. There have been times in the past when companies were feeling that they just couldn't find a place in the market, and notably would go over, you know, and announce their products on the Windows side, which kind of really annoyed us. I don't think that's so true anymore. I think companies are beginning to feel that with the resurgence of Apple, not only can they make money in the iPod business, but the halo effect will allow them to make money in all the areas where Apple ships products.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit. We've all, I think, been to a number of these shows. I've been, I guess, to some of them since the late 90s, so probably almost 10 of them. Jeff, I'm not sure, Jeff and John, how many of these shows have you gone to?
John has us all beat, I'm sure.
Well, I started going in 1999. Maybe 98, but for sure 99. I think my first was Macworld New York, 99. Yeah, John so Farr and Dale Miller and a bunch of us got together and we saw the grand display of the orange iBook. I think that's when Apple unveiled Airport, and I think it's also when Phil Schiller jumped out of the third story window into the mattress with a G-meter.
It is, yeah. And actually, my biggest disappointment with that entire spectacle of watching Phil jump out the window like that was that the airbag worked.
Yeah. Yeah, that's unfortunate, isn't it?
Can you imagine what a show that would have been? Oh.
I'm pretty sure that may have been my first Macworld as well, but I went to just the New York ones for a while. We've all been to a number of these shows. We've seen this whole sort of spectacle a number of times, and it is kind of, I've always said, you know, when people ask me where I'm going, say, oh, I'm just going to the circus for a few days. It is definitely a big to-do. I'm curious, though, for you guys, and Jeff, why don't we start with you? What's the worst thing about Macworld San Francisco?
Oh, where do I begin? No, actually, there's a lot of really great things. The things that I really don't enjoy are the things that just wear you down, like not being able to get to all the booths that you want to get to, because there is so much going on. Even when it was a much smaller show, there's still a lot going on. By the time that week is over, you are just beat. And a week-long event like that, there's a lot of times I wish it was actually a four-day event instead of a five-day event. I think it would be a lot more manageable for people.
For me, it's the food.
Okay, yeah, that's the tough part.
The food inside the Moscone Center is awful, and it's hard to find a nice little bistro sandwich shop outside anywhere. The other thing that happens is that not only is the food bad, but you're scrambling to get what food you can
right after the keynote, we'll all be rushing for our computers. We'll be starving because we got in line early in the morning. And so even finding awful food to eat and finding time to eat is a problem.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's certainly a long show. Most consumer shows are probably 3 days long. Even auto shows, when they come into a town, are usually probably only 3 days long. A five-day show is an incredibly long time. Now, the fifth day, admittedly, is entirely conference stuff. And the conference, all the educational stuff that happens at these shows, teaching people how to use pro software and teaching people how to do different things with their Macs, that's all kind of a separate can of beans that doesn't happen at most consumer shows. But let's shift gears again and talk a little bit about product announcements. One of the other big things that happens at Macworld is this is nominally a podcast about Mac news and about product news. Macworld San Francisco is a huge time to release new products. Now, presumably, Jeff, it's like you said, the whole world is watching Macworld when it happens, in large part because Apple does its keynote there, does the keynote there. But is it really the best time to announce a new product going into Macworld? I mean, there are 400 companies there. Probably half of them or a third of them have something to say while they're there that's new. Given all of the din coming out of that show, is it really the best time to announce new products?
I think it's a gamble. And if you play your cards right, that gamble will pay off incredibly well. So yes, it can be the perfect time to announce a new product as long as you do it right. And another nice thing about announcing a product at Macworld, even though there's 400 other companies doing the same thing, there's no other time that these companies are going to be able to get this heavy a concentration of media people together to show off their products to. So it can be the perfect time to release a new product, especially if your product gets picked as one of the Macworld Expo Best of Show products.
John?
I view it from a slightly different perspective. I agree with Jeff that the whole world is focused on Macworld, and if you're successful in communicating and in your PR people, yeah, you can get the message out. But it's also the one time a year when you can get your product in front of some other people, not just the customers. You know, there are people who you may have been talking to about a merger. There may be people who want to invest in your company, and having them come to your booth and see the popularity of your product and then going off to the hotel room and working a deal is another very important thing. And that's the synergy. It's not just the vendors and the customers, it's the vendors and Apple and the investors and the analysts and companies working with companies, sometimes competing, but sometimes also working behind the scenes with each other. So that's why it's important to make a big splash there.
Fair enough. Let's shift gears now and talk a little bit about Apple specifically. We've been talking about the show. Let's talk about Apple specifically. Now, let's do this in the context. John, you filed a terrific piece the other day about, I guess this was last week as people are listening to this, and of course it's linked in the show notes, about Apple and secrecy and what you call, or I guess a lot of people call, the OODA loop, the decision cycle.
Right.
At Apple. And very briefly, if I may, if I understand correctly, what you call the OODA loop, or what is called the OODA loop, if I've got it, OODA is observe, orient, decide, act. It describes the sequence of events where something's going on and a company or an organization, the military, whatever it is going to react to that. Could you give us the 60-second, the elevator summary of what this article was about, just
sure,
to kind of get us all in place here to talk about this?
Sure. In earlier times, right after Steve Jobs came back, there was many things to do getting the company back on solid footing. And that required getting a handle on the hardware, getting Mac OS X shipped. And all of that entailed some surprise and delight. Apple was in complete control. However, as Apple has become more successful, they've branched out into more consumerish devices, possibly a cell phone, possibly this ITV thing that has been talked about. And that requires a different business model. That's agreements with other companies. You have to find a carrier for your cell phone service. You have to have agreements with the Hollywood studios. You're no longer in charge of your own fate. So you can do the OO part. You can do the observe and orient. But when it comes to the decide and act part, you are stonewalled by partners who you want to work with, but who also have their own interests at stake. And so I think that Apple's got to change a little bit in its approach to this surprise and delight, the one more thing, when it gets into products that they don't have complete control of. Mac OS X, Mac hardware, that's great. Give us one more thing. But when Apple's working with cell phone carriers, want to be an MVNO, want to sell Sony's movies, all this is very complex and can't be put into surprise mode as easily as Steve would like. And that's why I think Apple has to change.
MVNO, mobile virtual network operator, for anyone who's following along at home. And this is the general approach that you took in your article. I want to back up from that for a second. With that context in mind, I want to talk about a couple of other things here. For both of you, Jeff, John, what has become, understanding that Apple is now a much bigger company. I mean, it's in the $20 billion club. They're making on the order of $20 billion every year. It's a much bigger company than it appears to be when you kind of hear about them and think about them, think of them as a small renegade company. What has become predictable in Apple's product cycle in every year? What are the things that we know are going to happen?
Well, we know, like if we start at the beginning of the year, we know we're going to see some type of consumer-level revisions, whether that's an upgrade to an existing product, a new product announcement. Everyone expects that at Macworld we're going to see a new version of iLife and iWork. So we have the predictability of that. And we always know that there's going to be something else that happens right around Worldwide Developers Conference in the spring. So the predictability I see from Apple now is that they have this cycle of events that everyone can look for. The thing is trying to figure out what it is Apple is actually going to spring on us at all of these different events.
Now, the one other thing I would add to that list is the iPod upgrades and the iTunes upgrades twice in a row now in the fall. We've had upgrades to the iPod iTunes product line or services. And that seems like a reasonable thing to continue to expect, that before the holiday season, since the iPod is the big holiday product for Apple now, before the holiday season, you know, in August they'll flush out with back-to-school sales on iPods or pairings where they give away iPods. They'll flush out their inventory, and they'll then release new products in the fall, new iPod products.
And watch Tuesdays. Things happen on Tuesdays with Apple.
Tuesday, right, exactly. All those media events. Now, I'm curious here, John, there's a distinction here between the timing and the features. Now, we might know, sure, iLife is going to get an upgrade at Macworld. The pro-level stuff is going to get an upgrade at WWDC. The iPod's going to get an upgrade in the fall. But there's a difference between the obviousness of that and the secrecy of exactly what those changes are going to be. Given the context of the article you wrote, is there a problem with Apple keeping the features of its new products quiet, even if the specific things that they're trying to do, or the general things that they're trying to do, are more obvious?
Well, I think that when Apple was in charge of its own fate, they could more or less dictate what was going to happen twice a year, and that gave them enormous liberty, but it insulated them from the rest of the community, which was a problem. now Apple's more of a partner-like company, working with a lot more companies in concert to develop products. You know, there was a rumor a while back that Apple was going to have a plasma TV with a Mac behind it, just like the iMacs. So, you know, that requires working with, you know, Pioneer or some other company. So I think it's increasingly difficult to take these events and squeeze them into a twice-a-year event, WWDC and Macworld, because these agreements come and go. And when the agreements happen, you need to jump inside the competitor's OODA loop. You need to be able to react right then. You just can't save some nifty cool toy from Mac OS X to be displayed at Macworld or some new you know, software product. So I think that creates additional problems for Apple.
Does Apple still benefit at all from secrecy?
Well, you know, when you look at Vista and you look at the ripoffs, and recall David Pogue's cool video the other day about how, you know, Vista looks an awful lot like Mac OS X. And when you look at how hard it's going to be to differentiate an Apple phone in the consumer's eyes, not in the Mac expert's eyes, from the millions of other cell phones on the planet, it may be becoming more and more of an issue. I think that Steve may be kind of hooked on this. It's been written before, not by me, that Apple still seems to be the kind of company that acts as if it's ready to go into bankruptcy. And, well, that is a healthy attitude. You know, compete with yourself or somebody else will. It also keeps Apple from doing some of the things it needs to do in the ways that IBM and Hewlett-Packard do them. So I think Apple's in a growing up phase here. They just don't know it yet.
I think it's interesting. One of the arguments that you were making in your article was about the fact that it sounded like you were making the argument that the OODA loop, the decision cycle of the internet, of bloggers, of the mainstream media, of Wall Street analysis, of the Mac web, all moves faster than Apple does. It wasn't immediately clear to me that those two things necessarily, I mean, like you said, Apple competes with its competitors, right? It doesn't compete necessarily with the perception of what, or with the conventional wisdom of what it will or won't release. Does Apple necessarily need to get away from the situation where there are crazy people like us talking all the time about what they might or might not do a month or 2 months or 6 months or a year from now?
Well, no, I don't think that's something that we want, because Apple has a reputation, aside from this issue of secrecy, Apple has a reputation for putting their heart and soul into best of breed products. Steve Jobs is still the master at understanding what people need and want, and getting his engineers fired up to deliver insanely great products. And we want that. We want Apple to be the company that cares about us and delivers really great things, as opposed to a company like Microsoft that uses the Zoom as a political weapon, as a platform, as a business vehicle in order to work deals to distract the industry and so on. So we want to keep what's good about Apple in that regard. And we need that enthusiasm. We need to show Apple, everybody needs to show Apple that that's what's great about the company and keep them fired up about that.
Jeff, I'm curious your reaction to this, the idea, the relationship of Apple to secrecy. Do you feel like secrecy is a necessary part of the way Apple does business?
Well, on one hand, yes, because the secrecy gives them, to a degree, a leg up on some of their competition, because their competitors don't have time to react as quickly to the new products as they would if Apple had laid out a roadmap, you know, their 18-month game plan. On the other hand, a lot of the secrecy that Apple is trying to give the illusion of having is gone, and it working with Intel is a perfect example. If you want to see what processors are going to be in Apple products over the next 18 months, just watch and see what Intel announces when they lay out their roadmaps. And when they have their own version of their developer conference, they lay it out very clearly what they're going to be doing with processors. So it makes it very easy for us to look and see what Apple will be doing with their computers several months down the road.
Now, I'm starting to have a difficult time with this subject for the following reason. Maybe because Apple works with Intel, we need to give up our expectation of surprise when it comes to hardware. Maybe because Apple gets all of its iPods made by vendors, we need to give up our expectation of secrecy about the types of iPod devices that they're going to be making in the future. The fact that they're going to shift eventually from, for example, like we were talking on the last show, from Flash to PCM maybe sometime in the future. Maybe that's the kind of stuff we have to expect Apple to give up. And frankly, Apple seems to have given a lot of that up. They don't seem to be talking about processors very much. When they release the new processors, they say, hey, this is sweet. We have fast new processors in our machines.
Or in some cases, they don't even announce it. It just shows up on their webpage.
Exactly. But Time Machine, that was complete. No one said, oh, Apple's building backup directly into their next generation of, or into the next iteration of Mac OS X. Games on the iPod. Sure, someone realized that a games executive had gotten hired away, and so there was some discussion about it beforehand. But by and large, did people know that that's how this thing was going to shake out? No. Did they know where they were going to sell them through the iTunes store? No. There was a lot of stuff. There has been a lot of stuff, feature-oriented stuff, consumer experience stuff, where Apple can still, it seems to me, get up on stage and say, you know what, fine, everyone knows we're releasing a new iPod today, but by the way, these are the things it does, and this is how it does them. And then they get up and they do their demo, and people say, wow, that really is actually different than everything else that's out there. It seems to me that surprise and that secrecy play a vital role in that type of maneuver.
Yeah, as I said, in those things that Apple controls, their operating system, it can be very important. Yes, absolutely.
You know, I want to have some of that surprise. I understand the need to have openness so that it makes it easier for all these enterprise-level businesses to plan out their own roadmaps, but I still want to have some of that surprise. It's like if you get a birthday present, it's all wrapped up, but you can see through the paper and you know what it is. It's still fun to get it, but it's not as fun. And that's one of the things that I love about Apple products. We have that fun surprise that goes along with the release when they do just that. Well, here's an iPod. Oh, but by the way, look what it does.
Yeah, but Jeff, to go away. Remember what happened last week, Jeff. We were all excited about seeing a new Apple cell phone at Macworld, and Cisco Linksys went ahead and shipped their own version of the iPhone. So not much surprise there.
That's true. But you know, of course, we have to keep in mind that with the iPhone, that's a name that the media came up with, and it's not something Apple came up with. And apparently, that's a name that Cisco's had for a long time. So
I read that they tried to sell it to Apple and got nowhere.
And, you know, it's interesting to me when I think about, and I talked about this on the Roundup when the report was still the Roundup, a while ago about iPod games and where that was taking the iPod. To me, there's no need to develop a separate product called the iPhone or called anything else. You just have a version of the iPod in the same way that they dumped photo capability and then video capability onto the iPod and said, hey, it's an iPod. It happens to do other things than the music that it originally started doing. It seems as though Apple has really banked on the cachet of the iPod and controlling it with iTunes as a piece of software, so that it's not necessary to develop a whole separate product line and brand.
That's a very difficult issue for Apple. You know, cell phones have a whole lot of features in them that iPods do not. Basically, what you do on an iPod fundamentally is you scroll to a song and you play it. But in a cell phone, customers have come to expect a lot more functionality. And having a user interface that elegantly puts that complex operation in the cell phone, you know, calling up an address book and all the things that you do, and keep the interface simple is a real challenge for Apple.
And it will be interesting if, in fact, they're doing this to see whether or not they pull it off.
I would hope they can pull it off, because elegant is not a term I would use to describe the interface on any cell phone I've ever played with.
Right.
the one other thing I would say on all of this, we were talking about the iPod and what it does. I'm now thinking back, Jeff, to when we talked last week about the iPod Shuffle. And you know, the elegant design, and how in something the size of a postage stamp you could get so many different clever design elements packed into that tiny little thing. Again, it's something that they control. They buy the chips from other people. They do all these other things, but then they sit down with their own engineers and they say, how do we build this thing so it's the perfect product? It sounds to me, if I could attempt to kind of sum this discussion up, and John, Jeff, tackle me if I do this incorrectly. It sounds to me like what we're saying here is Apple has to be able to give up, and in many cases appears to me to be giving up, expectations of secrecy surrounding things like its anything that it buys from anyone else, or, and they're doing this to a lesser extent, giving up the privacy surrounding the deals that they make with other people. So if they're going to sit down with movie studios and say, look, this is how we want to sell your movies, the fact that they're talking to these other studios is not something that they're going to be able to keep secret. But then when it comes to the actual implementation, it seems patently clear that Steve Jobs in particular and Apple in general have no interest in giving up control over the actual delivery of the experience so that they can tailor the features, so that they can do the design of the hardware, so that they can pick the exact software elements that are going to make it, as you say, John, an insanely great product.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. That's fabulous. That's exactly right.
Go Ricky.
Yes.
That's why they pay me the big bucks. I guess, is there anything else? Maybe what we should do here, does anyone have predictions that they want to... This is always a terrible idea, right? Sit down and do predictions before the show. But does anyone have a 20-second prediction that they want to do about what's going to happen? Macworld 2007?
I want to hear what John has to say.
I predict that the news on the ITV will be not as complete as we want. I predict that it will not ship, that the product plans are still being worked out, and that Steve will lightly refer to it, but nothing big will come of it. And that the focus at Macworld will be on iPods and Leopard.
iPods and Leopard. Jeff?
I think that's probably about on target. I'm sure we're going to see some more exciting tidbits out of Leopard, and maybe a little bit more about the roadmap for ITV. I think we will get a new version of iLife and iWork, just like they've been doing for us every year. And I think that there's something coming down the pipe that we're all going to sit back and go, where the hell did that come from? But we'll be really impressed with whatever it is.
I will say I definitely expect an interminable iLife demonstration. I am convinced that
yes,
the only reason we see that is because Steve Jobs himself actually genuinely loves the stuff that they put into the iLife suite. I think that that's there's no other explanation for why they spend so much time every year showing every little new feature.
Oh, sure. And I'm sure that at some point, just like in prior keynotes, Steve is going to stop and tell us who some of the people are in the pictures, because he always ends up doing that. You know, oh, this is Bill in accounting and his wife on their vacation. Yeah.
I still don't think we're going to see a spreadsheet in iLife. I think Apple feels like spreadsheets, after all those commercials that they've done with the PC and the Mac guys, coming out with a spreadsheet would be sort of out of form for Apple. So I'm going to predict there'll be no spreadsheet element added to iLife.
Fair enough. And I guess that has to be the last word. No spreadsheet in iLife.
No spreadsheet in iLife. So spake John.
And if
Jeff, you got to ring in on this.
I think the likelihood of seeing a spreadsheet, at least right now, is pretty slim. Maybe sometime down the road, and maybe not in the form that everyone's picturing it as part of the whole iWork thing. So no spreadsheet for now.
Right.
So, all right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up everything we can handle for Macworld for today. So I'm going to say that's the news, and thanks for listening to Apple Weekly Report.
Our content, of course, is written by the fine staff of the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. John, thank you so much for sitting in with us on this particular show. And that is, I guess that's all we got this week.
I think so. So stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone, we'll see you online. Happy New Year!
I made a mistake. I should have referred to iWork when I was talking about the addition of a spreadsheet.
Yeah, well, nobody's perfect.